I'm really excited to play this game with y'all. How much ammo do you think these ships have?
Charge the ion accelerator. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host for the Bella Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Oh, hello everybody.
Tanya Gates and Red Powell.
Hey everybody.
What up?
So much energy.
Gotta start strong before I fall asleep in the middle of Adam talking.
Yeah.
Is that
we
good?
Are now.
Is that,
officially, we start we are off officially well? Yeah, now we're starting well. Now we're starting strong.
So over the weekend, some cool stuff happened. Chicago opened there for the Warhammer 40,000 Age of Sigmar Hobby Challenge, basically the U.S. Open Series, where all that stuff went down this past weekend. And then the previews coming out of Games Workshop in Nottingham. Yeah, it's good stuff. I mean, it's good times.
I am so looking forward to all that guard stuff.
It's about time, right, Tanya?
It's about time we get some love.
That's right.
It's time to return. It's time to go back.
The weapons platforms and the heavy weapons teams, those got me, you know, feeling certain things.
Mm-hmm. Kassakin, like updated Kassakin, baby. We had a little bit of a, you know, they showed that these were coming, but now I've seen the sculpts. I am so in love with these guys. They're everything I want. Like, I mean, you can take them, make a force of Tempestus Scions, play them alongside your Cadians or whatever, and they just look freaking gorgeous. Really cool. Like, they're possibly the coolest looking base humans that I've seen.
Now, I mean, speaking of the Kashkin there, they'll go for pre-order in the Shadow Vaults Kill Team box.
I mean, the models are less than 40% head and helmet, which is a great proportion to be at. The previous ones, you know, just look like a strong breeze. Their heads would like they'd fall over and they wouldn't be able to get back up because their heads are too heavy. But I still have like approaching 250 of those dudes, so I can't really complain.
There was the other kill team, like the boarding action type stuff and the stuff they talked about over the course of the weekend. You know what I like about it is different ways to enjoy your 40k models.
Hey, Red, you see the new Juggerlord?
Oh man, did I?
Oh my lord.
I mean, like, they did it well. I don't understand the fascination with top knots, but I get it. Because you know he's no Karn, so he doesn't have like two like little whatever
two tassels.
Things. Yeah, he doesn't have two tassels. He's got one tassel and it's in a top knot, but I'll bite. I'm excited to see how that goes. I think it's a good sign for you know, we were talking about, I'm not saying that I was disappointed with the updated Khorne Berserkers. I'm excited for it. But it is good to see kind of like what the Death Guard got with some more specific characters or special characters. And so to see that and the return of the Juggernauts, like that's something that I think has been needed for Khorne. Specifically.
Yeah, just some like extra mobility. Is that what you're hoping for?
No, actually, just like taking Khorn Juggernauts and making them remotely relevant again, right? Like we had a Lord Discordant, which brought in a whole new like demon engine thing, and Juggernauts kind of like have fallen off to the wayside with cavalry in the game. Period. And when you see a bloodletter on a Juggernaut, like it doesn't really, they didn't make them into something where it was like, oh crap, it's this dude riding a armor mechanical rhinoceros that's going to charge through my lines or whatever. But now you got a World Eater on top and everybody's buying in. So I'm good.
Yeah. I do like that he toes the line of like he's unashamedly Khorne. You can't deny the fact that he's got Khorne everywhere. But, you know, there's a lot of scope and reasons that you could see this guy making his way into other CSM armies. Like, there's nothing here that says this is just a World Eater's miniature, a World Eater's model, especially from the sculpt itself. So, you know, a lot of exciting opportunities for other Chaos players as well, not just the World Eater varieties.
For sure.
I like that they put a chainsword on the front of the Juggernaut. Like, it's got a chain bladed sword on its, I don't know, on its horn, its front horn. It's just hilarious.
That means extra business.
That's right. It's plus one. It's like a plus one mace in D&D. It's plus one Jugger.
It's the reverse of not having a helmet, when you have a helmet that also has a chainsaw built into it.
Yeah, exactly right.
That's why would you ever take it off if it had a chainsaw on it?
Exactly. Instead of minus one toughness for not having a helmet, that's plus one toughness for having a helmet and plus one strength for having a chainsaw built into it.
Exactly right.
Look, we jumped off the guard before we talked about half the stuff. I know it's hard
fair enough,
to resist the call to chaos, especially that
flavor.
Who do
we blame for corn? Was that Adam? Was that your fault?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was me. All right, I need to say something for a moment.
Okay,
and it's going to hurt me. Just know this is going to hurt me as much as it's going to hurt you.
We had
a fantastic narrative for the fall of Cadia, for the end of the Cadian storyline, for the end of Cadia being the central focus of the Imperial Guard in every way, shape, and form. Cadia took over the entirety of the narrative. And then we had an endpoint for that narrative. We had a finale for it, where Cadia was decimated, destroyed. It was an awesome send-off. It wrapped up so many awesome storylines. It gave Abaddon the first win he's had in like two decades, you know? And yeah, it was cool. It was just fine for that to be like, Cadia is done. Let's start a new narrative for Imperial Guard. Let's when we release a new Imperial Guard range, let's do it as a generic, like penal, anything like a PCR, you know, planetary defense, PDR, sorry, planetary defense force, where you can make it whatever you want.
He said,
instead, I did. Instead, G-Dub has done the opposite. They've doubled and even tripled down on the Cadian sculpts and content, which I am here for, but the narrative part of me, the fluff player, is just like, it's gone. Let us move on and do something different. And then I slap myself and say, Adam, the freaking world broke before the guard did. The guard's still out there fighting, and we should be along with it for the ride. But part of me wishes this was a generic guard force, something that could be played as, you know, a bunch of different things rather than just more Cadian.
You can paint them however you want. I mean,
that's absolutely right.
The Cadian part is decals.
It's true. But you know what I mean? It's like if Gilliman got re-disappeared and the Ultramarines were shattered, but was still the entire focus of all the Space Marine content. You know, it's just kind of, it feels kind of strange that even though we're most of a decade removed from the fall of Cadia, and it's still the only narrative that gets any focus from the Guard.
I mean, you know, Tanith got their planet blown up, and you don't see people crying about them still in the game. So.
They should. I mean, wait, what else are you doing here?
You lose your planet, you lose your army. That's,
gosh, man.
Yeah.
Tough crowd.
That should be a rule. Make that a rule. Yeah. Somebody put that, write that down.
Yeah, you have to have your planet destroyed. I mean, yeah.
I want to talk about this Cadian Meltagunner, though. If you go and look at the preview on the Warhammer community site and you scroll through and find the dude with the Meltagun with the camouflage helmet, that is amazing painting. I mean, these all look beautiful. These are not even pretending that these are attainable for mortals here.
Mortals, yeah.
This camo helmet, I think, is really over the top.
And please don't think my negativity is in any way saying I'm not going to be buying all these models and adding them to my collection, because you know what I'm going to do. I've got 10,000 points of painted Cadians, all beautifully painted. I'm probably going to end up around 15,000 by the time this is all said and done. Thanks, G-Dub.
Look,
thanks.
You don't have a command squad where that guy's apparently, I guess, strapped a typewriter to his chest.
I have every other command squad, Cadian command squad. I've got three different bespoke Cadian command squads because there have been three different iterations over the years. Even the tiny bobblehead guys, I've got that one too. So yes, I'm going to get this one also. what is that Voxcaster? That is so freaking weird. That
he's got some plumbing attached to it.
Like, yeah, he does.
He's filtering water and typing.
And is it a fax machine? Got a fax machine?
Fax machine's been around for a long time. Fax machine was invented, I think, before the light bulb.
Yeah, I think y'all are undervaluing you're underestimating the value of a printer that works in the field. Okay.
I think that you're all undervaluing a printer that works.
Works.
Quite
yeah, exactly. I mean, this guy's got it like built into his suit. Good for him. We keep talking about like how like, you know, utility efficient power armor, blah, 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 space marines, you know, all the high tech stuff. A working printer is not to be scoffed at. You let that man do his job. All right.
These models are gorgeous. I mean, there's no getting around. We're picking a little bit of fun at this.
No, I'm not picking fun, Paul. I'm dead serious. We are talking about peak efficiency here right now. Yeah. This guy can print in the field. You just don't understand how valuable that is until you've been in the middle of the desert trying to print something. It's impossible. Yeah.
These
good
amazing.
On it.
Field
Thanks, GW.
Ordnance batteries. I think I'm going to like look forward to them because, I mean, so what we've seen here is the multi-missile launchers or heavy overcharge LAS cannons. And it looks like some kind of autocannon here.
Yeah, so for the longest time, Forge World has been the bastion of the... that they had the only real, you know, field artillery pieces. They sat somewhere between the tank chassis ones on Lehman Russes or the Medusas or your Manticores, and then you had the heavy weapons teams. And then Forge World is where you had to go get something that sat in the middle of those two things. And I'm pretty happy that G-Dub has been like, well, we should just have a sculpt for that. And looks like that's exactly what they're doing. Whether these will be like, you know, the Wyvern or the Storm Eagle rockets you get in your Deuces or your Wivens, or these will be completely bespoke, brand new things, remains to be seen. But I think they're crazy good sculpts, and I'm here for it.
I'm also looking forward to the fact these Sentinels do not seem to invalidate my loyalty to the Sentinels from previous that are currently
available. I have 12 armored Sentinels, and this is going to be one of the hardest pills to swallow. How do I ever pick up another Sentinel, or is my Sentinel journey completely ended now? 12 and out, 12 and done.
You're limited to what you have currently. That's it.
Do I have to get the new ones? They look pretty sick.
They look like they go together pretty well and seem like they paint up really well. But again, they're not too dissimilar from the current ones.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have any armored Sentinels. I played with Scout Sentinels, so I'm going to make these ones as armored Sentinels.
Oh, that's good.
Fantastic.
Good yeah.
Most of mine are Scout Sentinels also, me and Katachan.
I will say also, I like that the Sentinel chainsaw is like an actual arm instead of just being attached to like the bottom of the cab. Like, what are you supposed to do with that?
It's gonna run up.
Now we're getting picky.
Like the other.
I was gonna say we just went from helmets with chainsaws to now complaining about. Come on, let's just.
I'm not complaining. I'm saying that this is an upgrade.
Look, consistency is not part of our structure here.
Yeah, I just appreciate chainsaws. More chainsaws.
It is. Yeah, totally.
Well, now it's a more functional chainsaw, and I'm all for it. I mean, it'd be better if he had one on his helmet, but, you know.
In the grim darkness of the 41st millennium, the rotating blade and or tactical deli slicer is the peak of performance.
Of course, we got a new commissar here who is standing on a hill.
One thing I will never get tired of is more commissar models.
Yeah,
I think I have most of them. My favorite is still the Power Fist, reading from the book.
That is a great one. Yeah,
this guy is pretty good too, though.
He looks serious.
It does. He's about serious things.
And it looks like it looks like he's holding a Space Marine bolt pistol, not one that's like appropriately sized for
resized
a regular, you know, mortal.
Does it seem like his sword is also quite large?
I bet he's walking around with Space Marine equipment.
Like a boss.
Like a boss.
I put a Space Marine Power Fist on my company commander for the same reason. Exact same reason. I was like, because people will know that this guy means business.
Do you guys remember that? I think it was one of the Katachan company commanders. You had a full-sized bolt gun and a full-sized Power Fist back in the day.
Yeah, I've got one.
It was a
right
pewter sculpt.
Here, yeah.
Oh, that guy's awesome. That guy. You just
He's got a bit of a belly and everything, too.
Yes. Nothing but roids. That's all I'll say about that guy.
That's what's up.
How do we feel the old tactical rock gate is going in the sculpts of these models? I have some opinions. I'm canvassing others first.
Okay, well, the commissar that we're looking at right now, I feel like while he is on a rock, it is not a tactical rock, because his feet are not elevated one above the other. So it's just rock.
That is, in my mind, a perfectly acceptable rock configuration.
I feel like you have feelings about something else, though.
Yes. There's the new Castellan, generic Castellan model that came out that they're, you know, putting out right now. And he's got a beautiful plasma pistol. He's got a beautiful power sword, and he's got one foot on the ground and one foot is on, I think, the most oddly placed, out of nowhere, zero context or reason to be there slab of tactical rock that I've seen. It's just, I hate it. I've had enough of the tactical rock. It's just so overdone at this point. And I,
gosh, you're such a hater.
I am.
My goodness.
I'm a true guard player. Didn't you know this?
What are you saying?
Nothing. You can extrapolate upon that as you wish. I love the guard. I love Cadia. Cadia's my bae. Tactical rocks? Nah. Get off my Cadians.
What else can Cadia stand on at this point? Just rubble.
Oh.
Is there even rubble? Or has it been ground down to just like a fine silt at this point?
I mean, they could stand on the skulls of their enemies.
That works too.
Right? Seems like a Cadian thing to do.
It seems pretty alright. It's alright. Speaking of Cadians, these heavy weapons also looking sharp.
Yeah, very happy for the new heavy weapons teams. I've got a lot of the old ones, and they weren't a lot of fun. There wasn't a lot to work with. The tripods always seemed dinky. I broke a bunch of them. Yeah.
I'm looking at base sizes right now, and it looks like that the Cadian, what is it, the shock troops? Yeah, Cadian shock troops might be on the 28 mils, and the heavy weapons don't look like they're on 60 mils. I mean, this is pure speculation.
I agree, though. I do think they're larger.
I think you're right. Now that I'm looking, I didn't notice it before. I think you're spot on.
And unashamedly, I think the larger base sizes look better. Like, I'm still struggling. It's like, do I put all my craft worlds on the 28s, or do I still need to hang to those 25s that the old ones came with?
As somebody who enjoys making a nice scenic base, I like a big base. So I would not be upset if these new kits come with bigger bases.
Oh, but it looks like the heavy weapons teams are on smaller bases than they currently have. Like, these might be 50 mils. I do not know. Again, this is pure speculation, but the 60 mils, you know, I think is what the current heavy weapon teams are on. And these do not look like 60 mils to me.
I agree. Like, I'm looking at some of my heavy weapon teams right now, and there's no way that platform with the proportion of the guardsmen and everything would fit on the heavy weapon team bases that I have right now.
But, you know, who knows? So now we can go talk about was it Lord Invictus?
It's like Invocatus or something like that. They've definitely pulled out the stops on this name.
It is. Yeah. Scholars of Chaos Lore may have heard of Lord Invocatus.
Man, look at that.
I didn't know.
I can see people calling him Invictus just because it's easier.
Just old Vic.
Yeah. Lord Vic. I mean, that's how we got Disco Lords, right?
Yeah, Vicky.
Yeah.
Lord, yeah. Vicky, let's do that.
And you are lying. There is a chainsaw on this dude's helmet. On the Blood Crusher's helmet.
Yeah, it's freaking outrageous. I love it.
Wait, you thought we were making that up?
Oh, no. No, I saw it originally. It's like, it's full on there.
I love it.
Yeah. So bringing the Juggernauts back as a thing, you think it's going to be something that's just on this one dude, or will there be options for troops, do you think? It's pure speculation.
I'd love to see more Juggernaut-centric. I would love to see that be one of the archetypes for World Eaters, to be like, you can have a Juggernaut-centric army.
He does say he leads thunderous charges of Blood Crushers and Berserkers and frontal attacks that light
it's
the sky aflame.
I hope so. Between, you know, Demonkin used to have something for bikers, which I don't think that bikers should go away by any means, but I do think having the variant, to do that though, there will, in my opinion, regarding cavalry, the game is going to need to just put cavalry and bikers kind of in the same category to a certain extent, because they don't receive the same benefit in terrain and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And reading the quote here, it says that Lord Invocatus pays homage to the original Chaos Lord on Juggernaut. And if they mean that he happens to also be a Chaos Lord on the back of a Juggernaut, then yes.
That's true. No, I have the old one, and I have another. Like, I love some of those models. I was kind of sad when they went away from it, to be honest. And so,
no, they look completely super right. Chaos.
Yeah. I had that guy as well. I also have that same Jugger.
This is not, but they are not same, beyond the fact that it's a dude in power armor on a Juggernaut.
He has an axe, though.
The old one looks so cute, though.
I know, it's so derpy. I freaking make it.
It's like a Fisher-Price, like,
whoa,
Chaos
there.
Lord.
Oh, okay.
So cute.
Yeah, like that, that could be
goodness.
Like a rubber ducky.
Oh, my God.
I've actually got a product idea for G-Dub. Getting some of these old sculpts that are already small, sizing them down further to have as keychains. Like, I would have that Chaos Lord on a keychain. That would be sick.
I wonder if they could make that, but make the Juggernaut's head like a bobblehead.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be all over that.
This one would not work for anything we just described, because it's a lot of metal. Like, the old one was
it couldn't be metal. No, it couldn't be metal. Unless you want it as a defense mechanism.
Yeah, you can just carry this thing in a sock and no one will
Dude, nothing would terrify me more than like a dude coming at me with an old great unclean one in a sock, just like spinning it like a mace. Like, you'd freaking die. Like, even, yeah. Anyway,
sturdy sock.
As anybody else, when I look at that old jugger, I just think about Ghostbusters. I just think about Ghostbusters. You know, the dogs, the gatekeeper and the dogs?
Yes.
I always see that every time I look at these old juggernauts. It's just like, yeah, it brings me back to the first Ghostbusters. I love it.
I built my, the Mauler Fiends as the gatekeeper and the keymaster.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, sick.
And you have a great flame one painted up as Marshmallow Man?
I don't, but that's a great, that's not
with a sailor hat?
With a sailor hat? Yeah, do it. Oh my God, that's so good.
That is not a bad idea.
He's the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. Thank you very much.
Yep. do you know what I would...
Well, this says, but what forces will he be leading? We've already seen a fresh new look for the Khorne Berserkers and the Demon Primarch who leads them, but there's more yet to come in 2023.
Exciting.
So I guess it's more towards a end of the year type thing.
I mean, my birthday's in January, so I recognize that they're waiting for me.
Oh, there you go. That makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense now.
It says, Lord Imokatus would definitely look good leading a pack of summoned flesh hounds or blood crushers, and blood crushers into battle, but we wonder if we'll have any more allies on the way. ...
Oof.
...
I guess we'll never know.
Guess not.
Yeah, there's definitely no big angry guy just around the corner that we've already seen.
But that guy wouldn't be leading him. Angron would be leading that guy. So there's more got to be more behind that guy.
Angron should have a special rule that if you bring a unit of juggernauts alongside him and they are within 3 inches, he gets to throw one at you. just the rider, everything, he just pegs it.
Chuck
it. Fastballs a juggernaut into you. And you take like D6 mortals or something.
Very reasonable. The thing we're talking about with the all the boarding actions and stuff, the Arcs of Omen, did y'all pick up what they were putting down during that part of the preview?
By all means, enlighten me, because I look at a lot of these things and I get flashbacks to like Aeronautica at the end of 7th edition, where it was just pretty much a non-event. And then when these things come out, I wait for somebody to tell me it's awesome now, unfortunately. So tell me it's awesome, Paul.
Well, no, we don't know anything about it yet. It's basically a whole new game. Game mode called Boarding Actions. The new rules will allow your army to fight intense boarding action battles through the claustrophobic corridors of Voidcraft, Space Hulks, bunkers, and more using standalone sets of the new terrain first found into Kill Team Into the Dark. So the Kill Team sets.
Well, is that J-Dub realizing that Zone Mortalis is like one of the sickest, best ways to play 30k and being like, well, let's make sure we have a 40k version of that too?
It does strike me very similar to Zone Mortalis, yeah.
Dude, ZM 30k is one of the best times, and so I'm down for that if that's what they're doing.
Is anybody else going to make fun of him for saying Zed, or is that just reserved for the Canadians on this podcast?
Dang.
Gotta let him have it every now and then, I guess.
I did. That got past Red. That got past the Keeper.
I know. Nice.
I'll take my little W's, thank you.
But what I think is...
I was asleep, I apologize.
Yeah.
What I think is one of the unique things to Warhammer 40,000 is that almost all the space battles like end in boarding actions, which is ridiculous. Like even Space Marines, we've got them right where we want them. Let's go and board their ship.
Yeah, let's go get over there.
No, let's just keep throwing, rail guns at them.
Yeah.
Until there's nothing left.
Let's kill all life support and vent them all into space. Then we'll go salvage what's left. Oh, can we just go stab him with this tactical deli slicer I've got right here? It would be a shame if I didn't get to use it, right?
Exactly. We flew all this way, with bolt pistols and chainswords. But that's also one way of saying, I accept it. I accept that of being part of what is cool about like the way the Warhammer 40,000 world works.
Some of my favorite engagements so far that I've come across in the Horus Heresy are the boarding action ones. Like, there's just something so cool about hearing them take a dreadnought over to the other ship and how like kind of cramped and claustrophobic it was in this giant ship, just because there's like this huge dreadnought in there as well. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like this over the top stuff about 40K that I absolutely adore.
Yeah, I'm cool. I'm poking slight fun at it, but I do think it's awesome that's
no. I'm really excited to play this game with y'all. How much ammo do you think these ships have? Let's go back to it. Where do you think they get ammo from?
They salvage it from meteors or whatever.
Sure. Yeah, okay. But so, like, you've only got so much ammo. You're in space, and you don't know when your next resupply is. If you could actually just manage to, because like trying to shoot something in space, you know, kilometers away, like the odds of that and whatnot, like you'd have to get right on top of each other, which almost seems just as unlikely. And then to do the boarding action, which we've already argued is unlikely, you're arguably getting in there. And I'm just playing devil's advocate because that's part of my job here. That's what I get paid for, right, Paul?
Yep.
In the description. Think of how cost efficient that is versus all the ammo that you'd have to expend to destroy these things otherwise, just by plugging some of the people that could just go in and mess up the ship from there.
Oh, so you think it's an economic thing?
Absolutely. 100%.
Okay.
So you think it's once again back to the base tithe or base economy of the 41st millennium where life is way, it's flesh. Life is way less important than currency, than like material.
Well, I mean, again, like you just don't know. It's the logistics of managing everything across this huge expanse, like real world scenarios, right? If we want to go into, we'll dip away from current events and look at historical events. Napoleon going in his march towards Russia, like he had the entire European continent going for him, except for good old England, right? And he was trying to create these massive depots to keep himself logistically going across the continent. And it still didn't pan out for him. And so you can only imagine taking that kind of scale into space. And there's a whole thing. I know we're expensive, Philippe, blah, 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 so on and so forth. I get
it. It's a big ship, man.
Yeah. I mean, but they're also not just 3D printing torpedoes the size of skyscrapers or anything. So,
I mean, they could be. Isn't that kind of what the...
STCs, the templates, yeah. Right? Yeah. But that still takes like way more effort than is probably worth for all of those fights that they have to do.
Sure.
So a boarding action is probably pretty efficient, all things considered.
Yeah,
it's okay. I dig it.
No, you convinced me. I'm back on board. I mean, I was never not on board with it.
My only count that was how do you board a starship? Like how do you make that a reality?
With the Earth's claws or whatever they are.
Drill a big hole in it and then they go.
Well, how close are you going to be to drill a big hole in it? Usually it's because you've caught him, disabled him, defeated him already in order to board them. One of you's kind of already won or lost that battle, right, Red? If they're getting boarded. Walk up beside, hope they don't see me with your giant, you know, city-sized battleship.
Yeah, but Dreadclaws, like, and that's where it goes into, I mean, again, we've talked about World War I, World War II kind of things they've pulled off of, but, you know, these dreadnought kind of ships that they have, and then carrier-like actions with fighters and everything to intercept what's coming in, because then you look at the assault or the boarding capability. I mean, Dreadclaws, what cooler design could there be than these essentially drop pods with drills and meltas on them that dig on, like literally claw into the ship and then drill and pour into it and then dig, you know, there's some pretty cool stuff that they've played around with. You can see where they've actually gotten into it. And I appreciate the effort and the creativity that goes behind it, but it's also, I understand the separate argument where it's like, well, if I just do this, like that talk about void shields and all sorts of other things that are out there that they talk about, you know, that stuff's never happening. And so it's pretty interesting. I mean, I'm a huge Battlefleet Gothic fan.
Oof,
and
yeah.
The stuff, the scale that you're doing attacks and, you know, torpedoes, just unless they're guided, which kind of breaks away from the older concept of torpedoes, definitely has its own element and guided weaponry and lasers and rail cannons and all this other cool stuff that's out there. So a great other aspect, you know, we talked about Kill Team, Battlefleet Gothic. I think they've shown with Armada, the video game, that they could definitely make it. I bet you people would be all over Battlefleet Gothic, but I'm sorry, Paul.
With this, like the preview article here, it mentions that they're not going to like sprinkle in some random 40K rules that you'd need if you, you know, played that faction or whatever, like a campaign book. This is going to be its own thing. The Arcs of Omen is going to be
cool.
You know, if you want to play this game mode, get this book, go for it.
Well, so that takes us, I guess, to how many times the cities battles or the planetary assault battles with like assault, you know, attacker, defender. How many times have any of y'all played those games?
Back in the long time ago, I've definitely done that.
Yeah, no, but you have played it, but that's, you haven't done it recently. What about you, Adam?
I played the Planetary Assault one once of all the other modes of playing 40K that have ever existed. 30K Daniel, seemed to where I do a lot more. Like, I've played 30K APOC, I've played 30K's Zone Mortalis a lot, but 40K alternatives, pretty much never, apart from that, like once or twice.
Tanya, have you tried any of those?
No, I don't think that they existed since I've been playing.
Yeah, see, like in the Cities of Death probably has actually, because it was out in 8th edition, but it's just not been something that was really highlighted. And I'd say that's honestly a shame, because I've enjoyed experimenting through these different game modes that they've provided, and I really hope that this is one that catches a little attention. You know, it's something that arguably, I don't know exactly how you'd build it into some of these more standardized competitive events, but I could see a comp event that could play into it, and I think it could be really cool.
Yeah, this the boarding actions thing that they previewed, like the specific boarding actions things, strike me very similar to like a Zone Mortalis type setup, and that I think would lend itself real good to tournament stuff.
I have an idea for a short story. Maybe feel free to indulge me for a second. It's like a venerated veteran like squad of Space Marines during the Heresy. You know, they've survived Istvan, they survived multiple battles. Never quite tell you which side they're on. It's just that they're on their way. Like they fight their way to Beta Garmin, and it's like telling you about all the amazing accolades and incredible things. They're in the freaking fleet battle above Beta Garmin, you know, the Titan Death, the crazy pivotal pre-Solar War portion of the Heresy, get loaded into their Dreadclaw drop pod, ready to make planet fall, and then they miss. And that's the last is. It's like, we missed. ... End of story.
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. I want my money back.
How cool would it be, though? It's just like such an amazing thing. The last line is just like, we missed. ... The end.
You'd be the biggest troll author ever.
Somebody put in a submission for the next Black Library.
No, that's your idea.
Do it. No, I can't be bothered. Somebody else do it. I sprinkle gold elsewhere. It's not for me to harvest. And by gold, I mean terrible ideas. Thank you for indulging me.
Here we go. On that note, let's take a quick break, and then we will come back and, you know, talk about more preview shenanigans.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. The Shadow Vaults, I said, going up for pre-order this weekend. Get your hands on it. It'll be the first, I guess, time you can get your hands on the brand new Guard stuff, because the Kaskin are in there. It's Kaskin versus the Necrons. And a couple new Necron models in there too.
I think that those plasma sites are some of the cutest Necromunda models that I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, super cute. They just like supercharge like all the death machines that just kill everybody.
I know. And they're all like hunched over and cute. I don't know.
They're just carrying all the Necrons on their backs.
Adorable at the same time. What I'm telling.
Okay, so I said I was not going to play Kill Team. I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to play Kill Team. And then they released these Kaskin models. I'm like, guess I'm going to learn how to play Kill Team then, aren't I?
The Kill Team is awesome. I mean, as far as like picking up in the speed of play and how the complexity of play can scale, you know, differently, and it is over, and you know, you can play 3 or 4 games of Kill Team in the same time you play one game of 40K.
Can we just talk about the heavy bolter dolly for a moment?
Yes, it's also so cute.
There has to be an objective or some type of adversary or whatever, like an NPC.
Well, apparently you can like take control of them, right?
If you get to them. Yeah, in Kill Team, there's platforms that you can like do stuff with. So I could see that.
Yep. These are interactive and provide a whole new tactical dimension to your games.
I do love that I've been memeing about the tactical deli saw and deli blade. Apparently, like, it's a robot crawler with an old buzzsaw on, which is literally everything I've been talking about. And memeing on. So good.
But I think that like the heavy bolter platform is just like the 40K version of Wall-E. And I'm just like, I'm enamored with it. Look at how cute it is.
It's cute as, but it's also like, you know, you go around to your kind of awkward uncle's place for a barbecue or a grill, and he just wheels out that, you know, Costco $20 grill that, you know, nothing good's going to come off of, and you're like,
it's not the grill, it's the operator.
It's true. Just like, I wasn't confident in this, and now my suspicions are confirmed. It's still cute, though. I'm a big fan.
These box sets are I think, good value, especially if you're just getting into it, like if you're just jumping into this, because you'll get the terrain, you'll get the boards to put it on, and then you get two, like, distinct armies that you could just play.
I know you mentioned it before about some of the paint level on these boxes being good. You mentioned, like, the camo on one of the helmets, but I just want to say, I don't know who they gave these box sets to. The Cadian box set with the new range, and then this Kill Team box set, but the paint is off the chart. It is really high level.
This, especially the highlighting around every bit of this armor.
Yeah, dude.
And the camo really on the armor. I mean, yeah. Come on.
I mean, I'm not even just talking about that. The Necrons look phenomenal. That's like one of the best black scheme Necrons. They look Tron-like, like really well executed greens and blacks. Freaking phenomenal.
Yeah, much love to the studio for putting this, like, really impressive figures out as, you know, I guess showpieces.
I think that there is something really utilitarian to this style of paint as well, especially with the Kasserkin, because they are super detailed, whereas the old style Cadian models were not very detailed. And I think that this very high contrast paint scheme really shows off all those details, so we can see how different they are than what has come before. I also just really appreciate a high contrast paint scheme. So for me, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Some of these models sculpts pretty spectacular. I like the dude with the chain sword and the plasma pistol. I think he's my favorite.
Classic, really.
Barely a rock in sight. I love it.
And then the dude with, like, just seeming like a, I guess this must be the hotshot las gun or a mega shot las gun, and the
volley gun. Yeah.
Is it about, it's got the single barrel, but it's got the long scope on it.
Oh, yeah.
The dude wearing, like, the trench coat.
Yeah, I see it. His foot's on a rock.
Dang.
Take him off the list.
I'm interested to see what that mine is all about. It's a mine, right?
So I can tell you how it works in the guard set, the Deathcore Krieg, is that you do go up and you spend an action to set the mine, and then you can detonate it later, and it does damage to everything around it.
You just place, like, a little token down?
Yes. Okay. And then it will, it's something, I think you're the only one that can detonate it.
Like, the model that placed it is the only one that can detonate it?
I think so. Yeah, as an action. But it does, it blows up, you know, all stuff around it. Does a lot of damage. So it's something, if you can lure people into a situation, you can catch them that way.
I really appreciate the optimism of his, like, put on one extra layer of, like, cardboard armor on top of his cardboard armor. And he's like, this is enough. I'm sorted. Safe.
Yeah, that doesn't even look metal. It's like, it's a piece of leather.
It looks like leather. He's got, like, a leather jerkin over his, like...
That's his cool points. He's like, yo, this is how everyone knows I'm a rebel. Like, I'm...
He's exactly right.
I'm in the guard, and, you know, I follow orders, but I'm cool. I'm the cool one in this group.
Exactly.
Cool as a cucumber. That's why they gave him the explosives.
That's right. You know, there we go. Is that standard issue in the guard red?
I was going to say, don't be fooled. These people exist in real life.
I have actually had the absolute pleasure to, like, digitally meet somebody who used to do ordnance disposal in the Middle East. He is one cool dude. I'm just going to say, like, shout out to you, Adrock. You are an amazing man.
Oh, heck yeah.
Amazing. Hilarious.
Oh, no.
But yeah, even by today's standards, he's not wearing much as like explosives.
And this is like, what is it? Plasticrete or something? Whatever their carapace armor is made out of.
It's faux leather. We all know what it is. It's
it's a packing blanket. Let's get real.
Yeah.
No,
it's the guard, baby. Only the best.
I've been scrolling through the models as we're talking about them, and they are all phenomenal.
They are, dude. They're actually, there's not a miss here. Every sculpt is amazing. Every pose is phenomenal. Yeah.
I found that to be the case, though, with all the kill teams, is that, like, they're just awesome. Like, they've spent a lot of time focusing on these, like, cool models, unique poses, and, you know, if you like the faction, you're probably going to want to pick it up.
Agreed.
You know, I think it's really cool to see the difference as well between how they handle the Kasserkin as opposed to how they handled the Death Corps of Krieg, because I do feel like every single one of these Kasserkin, while their standard kit is mostly the same, they do each seem to have personality in them. Whereas the Death Corps of Krieg, no personality, right? Like they were pretty much all bog standard, the same, just like different weapon loadouts, in my opinion. And I think that that's really cool that they're kind of staying true to like the feeling of the regiments so far in these kill teams.
That's fair. Looking forward to seeing about getting some of these on the table. Although it's just got me anxious for the Guard Codex. Like, just what's in there? What can we do? Cannot wait. So yeah, that was the preview. Not a bad one.
There was a lot of stuff in there, I'm just gonna say.
Okay. And it's also 35 years of Warhammer 40K. So
yeah, congratulations to G-Dub. And congratulations to anybody who's loved this IP, loved this game. 35 years is an innings, and it's not slowing down at all.
And then, you know, there's that last little teaser trailer as the things were wrapping up.
Well, I had somebody message me with there's that picture of what looks like, I'm just going to come out and say it, Kerrigan from the Queen of Blades from StarCraft, that one of the images. It literally looks like it's someone jokes saying, oh, they're finally doing the StarCraft. The Zerg are finally unveiling that Tyranids are in fact just the Zerg, and Kerrigan rocks up in the 41st millennium and probably just gets killed immediately because, you know, punk StarCraft players 41st millennium. is this Dark Mechanicum? Is that what they've teased? Like that's the conclusion a lot of people have come to, and I can't really disagree with it.
You think it is? That's how you're gonna take it.
I think that's how I'm going to take it. I'm going to come out and I'm going to say Dark Mech on its way, confirmed. Adam Camilleri, currently sitting 2:06 p.m., 12th of the 10th, because I'm in Futureland 2022.
And it's so easy because all it has to be is literally anything not Dark Mechanicum, and you're wrong and I'm correct just by me saying you're wrong.
This is why it's fun.
I'm living on the edge here,
on the edge of zings, zings.
I don't mind being wrong in this case, but I'm going to really appreciate when I'm right.
I'm not even going to ask you what you think it is. It doesn't matter. Leave it open.
Doesn't matter.
It's clearly, in my opinion, there's something chaosy to it. I don't think that they're going for a new faction after having just released leaks of Votan and whatnot. I think it's like chaosy or something.
It also kind of looks Necron-y. Like, if it's not chaos, the only other thing it could be is like Necron-like. And Darkness in the Machine, maybe it's a new flayed one, like sub-faction.
That's Mechadin rights. That's all kind of Mechadin rights stuff. Is. Has yeah. to be. And then the fact that, you know, we've got some like weird code here, you know, like you have to, if you highlight over like the words on top of words.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, you'll get,
come to make you an offer.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool.
I mean, I have no idea what it's about. And one model, you know, or one silhouette does not make a faction.
Well, the silhouette also kind of looks like Fabius Bile, except it's way too slender to be an Astartes, and like his, whatever you call his harness thing is much more chunky than this one. But yeah, I did find it funny that somebody threw out the Queen of Blades immediately. I was like, it's Kerrigan from StarCraft, because the silhouette is very similar.
Yeah, this is, you know, it's going to be a mystery. We'll see. No, but I'm back with you, Adam. We'll see.
We'll see. Cool. 2-1 now, Red. You're going down.
Bye. That's
absolutely
okay.
Zero influence.
Literally, it could be any of several already existing factions, so I'll take that.
And if we're wrong, I'll just like get really sick on that episode, and Paul will have to cop it. It's great.
That also still sounds like a win to me.
Bang! Got me.
Let's jump to a little bit of tournament talk. Is that the Chicago Open won by Harlequins, Twilight, Sadith, which we have not really seen before, and then Emperor's Children. I mean, that was the finals.
Two awesome, super quick melee armies, essentially. It's really cool to see how the Games Workshop terrain is molding and incentivizing different modes of play. And we're really seeing that become, I mean, I don't want to say this is something that we got right on this show, but we said a couple of, even more than a year ago, saying that the different terrain formats are now becoming the main different ways to play the game. Because it used to be everyone played different missions, like in matched play. There was a bunch of different mission formats. And now, like, the ways that the most influential way of playing the game is which terrain you're playing on. And, man, Twilight Harlequins just had an absolute stellar showing And all the CSM, it's like CSM's playground, like the Melee trading game.
Literally last episode talked about how important terrain was.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it helps Neil enable, you know, other lists to be played. But then the third and fourth was Tau and Tyranids. Yeah. Tau shooting. You know, we're talking about Melee and how that's, you know, stronger in certain terrain. It seems to be, I'm going to use the B word, balanced.
Oof.
Oh, I feel like the internet's going to come for you now.
You know, after playing on the terrain format, seeing other terrain formats and experimenting with player plays and that kind of stuff, I feel like it's, you know, giving players a very predictable experience and then have it be, you know, well, one, the predictable experience is like probably 80% of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But the other 20%, you know, is having it be something that at least doesn't hamstring certain builds from being played.
Yeah, spot on. And it's become events are only getting bigger and more prevalent, and it's become a lot of power in the hand of the consumer for what they're purchasing. And a lot of people want to know ahead of time, like players packs have become really important things. I can't tell you how many players packs do I think I read in all of 7th and 8th edition. It's probably less than 10 in all those two editions. And I probably read every second in 9th edition because I want to know what the terrain setup's going to be. I want to know what the mission structure is going to be or if their missions are set. Like I want to know how many Dawn of Wars I'm going to play on, how many hold 2 or hold 1 missions, how many 6 objective missions there's going to be in my lineup. That it's really important, really impactful. And I know at the start of 9th edition, G-Dub essentially told us this was going to be the case. They said we want terrain to be the third player again. And like we discussed last week, it's certainly come to it. But a lot of power in the consumer now, the people buying tickets to these events in what you're purchasing.
Yeah. And then with having that play out, you know, with Nephilim and then with great players, you know, like all things being probably equal, and there was a nice, real nice mix of armies in the top 16, and two armies were battling in the finals that we had not seen before. Now, player skill aside, obviously great players, but piloting kind of different armies. And, you know, we talked a lot about Emperor's Children when we were talking about Chaos, and I think it might end up being the most powerful faction in that Codex.
It is a big deal. I mean, I think that we've talked about manipulating Melee. We've talked about all the advantages that bring to it. I think that it's definitely something. I don't think it was overlooked either. I don't think it's a surprise. I think a lot of people were just waiting to see it work. And good on that player for how well they pulled it off. Congratulations to them, because they definitely took it and made it into reality. And it was good to see. I think it was great to see.
Yeah, so Spencer went with the Emperor's Children, and he played like a big fat block of Possessed instead of Terminators. We've seen Terminators creep in. And there was Jack Harbster playing the Twilight Harlequins, and had a kind of a mixture. I would consider it like a hybrid list. It wasn't, you know, all Star Weavers or all fat squads. It was a kind of a mix of both.
Yeah, notable that he didn't have any bikes. I think he had 10 troop Harlequin units, and then at the rest of them, he had like 5 or 6 units of 5 in Star Weaver. So he's got the best of the mobility in the MSU, but he's got the ability to swing with other people's big bully units, things like those Possessed, like the big Leviathan Tyranid Warrior units. He's not just, you know, caught begging, being like, please don't table me to those units, which I think is a really good way to play. I had to look up what Twilight Harlequins did, because I did not know, because it's been such a long time.
Well, do you want to explain the difference?
Rumbling. Well, so they get... So usually the reason we don't see them is because upon release, light Sadeth Harlequins were over and above the best way to play them, and they have been the best way to play them ever since. And it took a perfect mix of terrain and player skill to make this one better, I believe. And hopefully other people will catch on and see that Twilight is a really good way to play. But they have extra piling and consolidations, and they get another attack on their first round of combat, I believe, which is hugely impactful when you're playing like the G-Job terrain merely like trading war. It just means that they get to go in, really take a pound of flesh, like consolidate and pile in with a savvy general, tapping a bunch of stuff, trapping a bunch of stuff. And of course, we know how many shenanigans Harlequins have in the fight phase. It's really interesting that we see these two armies, Emperor's Children and Twilight Sadeth Harlequins, because they both have a huge, like, deep bucket of fight phase shenanigans they can pull on you at the drop of any hat. So I think it's an amazing way to play it.
Yeah, with seeing them play and then seeing the, like, this mastery of their, like, how they distribute their buffs and positioning and, you know, seeing where they went for it in certain situations. You can see this all on the Warhammer TV Twitch stream. If you want to go back and watch the game, see how they did it, see it all shook out. It's kind of fun. I like seeing different armies make it in. You know, I do think things are kind of in a good state of the meta right now, where you can, as long as you're playing a reasonably put together list, you can kind of hang in any environment.
Yeah, agreed.
Some list that has some synergies, which we talked about the last couple of episodes. So if you
totally forgot. Twilight has the Twilight Fang, which is one of the best melee weapons. I completely forgot about this. They had this in the Psychic Awakening they got in the White Dwarf as well, but now it's restricted to just the Twilight Sadith. It's the one that gives you a number of extra attacks based on the battle round. So in battle round 4, this troop master gets 4 extra attacks and just becomes an absolute big problem blender. Plus 1 for being, so you're getting plus 5 because you're Twilight and it's the first round of combat. Absolutely crazy.
And then in addition,
the last piece of this is the fact that those 10 troop squads, for 1 CP, 6 is to hit auto wound. And because they got plus 1 attack, it's 50 attacks from that unit. So these 10 troop units, I think at 12s actually, they kill knights on the charge. They charge in and they kill freaking knights with swords and caresses and kisses, just like pokey, pokey, pokey on the shins, and oops, your knight is dead. It's kind of nuts.
Wow. Well, when you put it that way, of course he won.
Of course he won, right?
No, but what you'll see is really a bunch of like very strategic plays and trades and when to send out things and how to control the board and that kind of stuff. So it's worth going to check out the Twitch if you didn't catch it live. And it was fun to talk about. It's always neat when you can see an exciting game kind of play out in front of you.
Exactly right. I watched a fair bit of your content. I love it when you guys do, what is it, Northeast region of the United States, because I get to catch like the last 4 or 5 hours of it when I wake up in the morning.
Oh, good. I'm glad we could be there. This was, yeah, I mentioned it was in Chicago and got to go to a couple of cool places. We talked about that on the last episode. Got to hit at least one of those.
Yep. You're gonna give us a review, like a taco review?
I didn't do anything. Unfortunately, I didn't get to the food stuff. But I did get to that Buddy Guy's Legends place. It was pretty cool. It had live music.
Nice.
Blues music. And it was pretty close to the hotel. So, you know. I was like, where is this? Like, it's right there. And I'm like, no, like, how far away? He's like, no, you just walk out the door and it's right there. So that was pretty good.
Convenient.
Yeah. But also a cool place. It does have a cover charge in the evening, so keep that in mind if you go by. But yeah, again, I had a good time hanging out with folks, of course, seeing Warhammer players. And the hobby, we talked a little bit about this on the stream, but the hobby challenge was basically amazing. People come and they just hang out. They get a limited edition model or some signature model as part of that, and they have to build, you know, some kind of diorama or something around that model. And they've got access to tons and tons and tons of bits and sprues and kits and stuff to build whatever creation that they want to build. And then it gets primed, pictures taken, judged, you know, all this other kind of stuff. Incredible.
So you didn't have to paint it, you just had to make it?
You do. There's several different stages, and I think you get to choose which stages you're a part of.
Interesting.
Yeah. But there is just making it as part of it, and then there is, you know, painting and priming and that kind of stuff. And also some hobby classes, specific classes that were going down. Those actually start on the day before the tournament starts. And so if you wanted to, I don't know, get some last minute hobby tips, you know, to finish out your army for full battle ready points, you could do that. But that's what makes some of the U.S. Open Series events are more than just a tournament. And so if you are listening and curious about coming and hanging out and being part of that culture, you can do that and have plenty of things to do all day during the series. You know, while other people are playing games, you could be doing something else.
Is there one more? Or is the finals up next?
One more. Kansas City is next, and then the finals in New Mexico.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and the finals being different this year, and I know we have also talked about this, but I don't want to stop talking about it, is that it's not just the Warhammer 40,000 and Sigmar finals. There's some really cool things happening that are open to anybody. I don't know if anyone, you want to talk about what you're doing?
I'm excited to the grand narrative piece in November in Albuquerque. I'm really excited to be able to participate in that. I think I mentioned last time, I wish I could have gone to Chicago. I'm sure it was awesome as far as venue and all. I wish I could have gone to Kansas City if I'd still been stationed out at Leavenworth, because the proximity and always a really great crew from that region, but I'm excited to be able to make it to Albuquerque for the grand narrative. I think it's going to be really awesome.
You know that like your experience starts when you get on the shuttle to the hotel.
Oh yeah.
To the resort, not even hotel, just the resort.
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually, you know, Albuquerque's close enough for where I'm at now. It's a drive for me. Oh, so well. I'm going to have to fly.
Well, make sure then you have to read the pack, get the stuff, because you're going to be almost immersed.
Yeah, I'm super excited. Get there. The approach that they've taken to this, I think, is really great. And it's awesome. From someone who attended some of the events for GW previously, you know, well before they started this, I'm talking about years ago, and then to see how it's coming back is really exciting for me. And this grand narrative event, you know, we talked some about how, I think it was like, you know, we talked about how Gazcool got going and how it was these games, these narrative games where some of these characters picked up, like Tycho's storyline and everything for the Blood Angels in Armageddon. Armageddon was a narrative fight that played itself out, and these characters came to be what we know them to now, you know, years later. And it's really exciting.
Dude, I want some of that back. I want some Ard Boys. I want some Games Days. I want some kids who are just getting into the game to get what I got when I first started playing.
The US Open series are so good. Different. It's not the Games Days because the Games Days were their own thing.
But it's Ard Boys, totally.
I will say that I think the US Open series is better than a Games Day.
I think for the event side of things, hands down. Well, sorry, from the tournament side of things, hands down, 100%, undoubtedly. This is so we've come so far. We've matured so much. I feel like the Games Day, the closest I've gotten to a Games Day again was being at Adepticon when I came over.
Yeah.
This year's Adepticon, that was the closest again. I'm like skipping through the halls being like, oh my God, look at that. Oh my God. It was kidney candy store stuff. I loved it so much.
Adepticon is amazing. There's no doubt about that.
I'm coming back. I am. It's locked in. It's happening.
Heck yeah. That would be very fun. That's really what we're going to talk about this week. Got the, you know, all this stuff coming up, all the stuff that just happened. You know, I feel like this is a great way to start, you know, kind of getting into this fourth quarter.
Where did this year go?
Yeah, it's wild.
Fourth quarter. Oh, my goodness.
Well, next week we'll have some Orktober content.
Yay.
So if there's any Orktober suggestions people have out there, let us know.
I'm sorry. I'm looking forward to seeing what people have for Orktober.
That was the most Eeyore thing I think I've ever heard you say.
Amazing. Believe me, it was sincere.
I did see an amazing orc army over the course of this past weekend as well. That was set up, actually made it into the finals for paint judging, and was really cool. Had a nice display board and was painted in a great yellow scheme. I know we talked a lot about yellow, but it was all basically like Morkanauts and that kind of stuff. It was all the big stuff in the orc list.
Oh man, close to my heart. I feel it.
Yeah, it looked like it'd be a fun list to play. Seemed like your games might be over pretty quick though.
Yes.
One way or another, which is not a bad thing.
The walkers are not super great right now. It's kind of sad, but they look awesome.
Probably the two things that spoke to me the most in the painting judging was there were two Death Guard lists that were just out of control good.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and different too. Like both painters had chosen different ways to represent the Death Guard, and one of them was converted with a bunch of Space Marine stuff. I'm sorry, converted with a bunch of Skaven stuff.
Ooh.
Yeah, and each one of the squads, it was like in a slightly different color or hue and had different bits and things like that. But it all came together collectively on a really nice scenic base or display base. And that was pretty good. And I just really did it a disservice. It was extremely good. extremely good. And another Death Guard force with just, you know, completely different take on it, but just all the skin and the transition and everything was incredibly smooth. The weathering was like hand painted weathering, not slopped on with a sponge or something, you know, like we suggest or I suggest sometimes. Like, and you could flip the tanks over and they were also painted and weathered on the bottom. Who does that?
Wait, you don't paint the bottom of your tanks?
Not very often, I'll tell you that.
What? Have I been doing this wrong this whole time?
Oh, no, don't stop. No. It will get you in the top brackets.
I paint the bottom too, Tim.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Apparently that's what winners do. That's all I can say. Winners paint the bottom of the tanks. But that's actually a thing when judges, when I've learned when paint judges, like with all things being equal, they'll flip a tank over and see if you painted the bottom of the tank.
Yeah, when push comes to shove, if one of them's unpainted, one of them is, you know what's up.
Yeah, but there were probably, I don't know, 20, 30 armies that made it into the top cut for judging. That's the quality and the depth of quality, super quality hobby at these things. And it was a pleasure to walk down and see them all. Very glad I got the opportunity to do that.
Do some people go to tournaments just to show off their paint jobs?
Heck yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
That's the time to do it. I mean, because there's people will come by, oh, this looks amazing. They'll use it as inspiration to go home and try to replicate that kind of stuff. Ask you how you did it. All right, folks, that is our show this week. It is always a pleasure to hang out with y'all. Thank you very much for listening. If you have not already subscribed, please do so. Throw some comments in, likes, that kind of stuff.
Five-star review.
Don't forget the five-star review. Buy a t-shirt. And then we'll see y'all next week.
See you.
Bye, everybody.
The Sept Tenets demand you tune in next week for the greater good, of course.